Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This week, the New England Patriots have another blame it on the refs moment.
The World Cup lineup takes shape.
And a few moments with Mean Joe Green.
That's right. It's time for our weekly check-in in the world of sports with Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Lisa. It must be time to talk sports. They've brought you in.
Exactly. That's right. The final lineup, Bill, for teams headed to the 2014 World Cup in Brazil is almost finished. As you well know, it's taken more than 2 years to get there. But 31 of the 32 teams have been selected. The U.S. is in again, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Also Chile, France, and Spain. Was this a field of teams expected?
Yeah, pretty much. There were a few surprises. Bosnia-Herzegovina is in for the first time, which is kind of fun. Iceland almost got in for the first time, which also would have been kind of fun. Uruguay is going to be the last team to qualify. They will win that honor at 6 o'clock this evening. But not a whole lot of real surprises.
I know Mexico just barely squeaked into the tournament, which was a big deal for organizers. How come?
Yeah, well, that was sort of a surprise. Mexico is one of the teams that was expected to qualify more easily. They had to play two games against New Zealand in order to get in. And it's a big deal for the organizers because Mexican fans have a history of traveling. They will go to the World Cup wherever it is in order to see their team play. And so the people organizing the World Cup were very much hoping that Mexico would get in because it would mean lots more people coming to see the games in Brazil.
Well, yeah, in Brazil, not too far away from Mexican fans. I also know that there's a huge amount of money on the line here in terms of endorsements, in terms of national income, like $1 billion for Mexico if it gets
Absolutely.
In.
Absolutely. Qualifying earns you a great deal more money than failing to qualify.
Talk about
no doubt.
Even more pressure than you'd expect.
All right. Well, from the World Cup back to American-style football, New England fans are sputtering mad at the NFL refs after a disastrous end of the Patriots game on Monday night against Carolina. So here's the situation, Bill. We'll set it up and then talk about it. The Pats were on the 18-yard line, 3 seconds left to play, trailing by just a few points. Tom Brady takes the snap. Here's the call from ESPN.
Here's the game's final play. Brady steps up, throws end zone, intercepted! Flag in the end zone. Hang on. Flag in the end zone.
They interfered with Gronkowski, Mike.
They carried him out the back line, didn't they? So the celebration put on hold here in Charlotte.
All right, so what happened was they threw the flag, right? There was supposed to be interference with Gronkowski in the end zone, but the ball was intercepted. The flag was called back. Dan Shaughnessy writes in the Globe that fans were shocked and chagrined, mortified, stupefied, a travesty of justice. What happened?
There are so many things that deserve our outrage more than the final call of a football game. Yeah, I mean, first of all, it wasn't a disaster. The Patriots are still very much on track to finish the season quite well and to be in the postseason when the time comes for that. It was a judgment call. In the judgment of one of the referees, or I guess the combined referees, the pass was not catchable by Gronkowski. And so the interference call that would have stood if he had been a legitimate target for the pass didn't stand, and the interception did, and that was the end of the game. Some people will say that it was a bad call, and just as many people, especially those living in the stadium where the game was played, will say that it was a splendid call.
Isn't this the type of call, though, that instant replay was specifically designed to prevent?
No, because there's no doubt about what happened, and no matter how many times you watch the play on instant replay, you still have to rely on the judgment of the officials.
Yeah. I got to say, I looked at the replay. It would be hard to imagine how that pass would have been caught by Gronkowski.
I agree.
Yeah, so, okay. All right, well, we'll move on.
Patriots, of course, a magnificent football team, but their jewelry box of Super Bowl rings comes up short when compared to the Pittsburgh Steelers. 4 Super Bowls in a decade, Bill. A year later, though, after 1979, the last Super Bowl win by the Steelers, Coca-Cola cashed in on star defensive tackle Mean Joe Green in a famous ad. You remember it well.
Where
a young boy, I do too, melts Joe's heart with a post-game soda pop.
Want my Coke? It's okay, you can have it.
No.
Really, you can have it.
Okay.
Joe Green told me in an interview this week that'll be on Only a Game that ad changed his persona and even his life.
You know, it did. It changed, my personality, particularly off the field. I was the guy that was unapproachable, first of all, because of the name Mean, probably because I was then ejected from ball games, and probably because I was the most friendliest guy when it came to saying hello and signing autographs.
Hey, Bill, I did not know how to handle it. Joe being nice. I was like going crazy. I'm saying, Joe signing autographs. I couldn't believe it. But, Bill, I do want to say, as soon as that contract was up, Mean Joe Green came back.
That's great.
That was, of course, Franco Harris chiming in to talk about his teammate.
And you can hear more from that story with Bill Littlefield on Only a Game. Bill, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Anthony. Thank you.
Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. It airs Saturday at 7 a.m., again at 7 p.m., right here on WBUR. And finally today, we began the show talking about late President John F. Kennedy's appreciation of the arts. That's where we're going to end.
The Museum of Fine Arts in Boston is currently showing a collection of watercolors by the American painter John Singer Sargent. While preparing the exhibit, a curator found a poignant connection to the Kennedy White House. Copies of correspondence between the museum's then-director Perry Rathbone and the former First Lady, Jacqueline Kennedy.
The MFA had loaned 6 Sargent watercolors to the Kennedy White House, and after the assassination of JFK, Mrs. Kennedy asked if the loan of 4 of them could be extended so that she could live with them a little longer after she moved into her home in Georgetown. Here's MFA curator Erica Hirschler reading Mrs. Kennedy's letter.
December 2nd, 1963. Dear Mr. Rathbone, I have just learned of your incredibly generous gesture to let me have for a while the Sargent watercolors I love so much. You cannot imagine what they mean to me, or perhaps you can, because you extended their loan so chivalrously. But they were in the room, our only room in the White House, which was our private, happy sitting room, where the children tumbled around, where we sat with friends. And the ones I chose were on the wall opposite where I sat. The president sat under them. Whenever I think of all our happy days and evenings in this strange house, which I dreaded so much coming to, I think of him sitting in his favorite chair with the sergeants over his head. Perhaps it is wrong to cling to a past that can never be the same again. Perhaps in a few months they will make me so sad that I will want to send them back to you. Because how will I be able to look at them without seeing Jack under them? But right now they're a consolation. And you are so kind to have loaned them in the beginning and to loan them again now. I do thank you from the bottom of my heart. Sincerely, Jacqueline Kennedy.
Boston Museum of Fine Arts curator Erica Hirschler reading from a letter from Jacqueline Kennedy. Our story was produced by WBUR's Andrea Shea and Samara Breger. You can find a link to see the paintings that were so prized by the Kennedys at radioboston.org.
And that's our program for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.